Hey, and welcome to Earful, the podcast where three friends with diverse musical tastes recommend each other an album and bring it in, listen to it, and then get back together and talk about it. I'm Luke.
I am Nick.
And I'm Peter.
And we're going to be talking today about the three albums, Nine Inch Nails, The Downward Spiral, Kid Cudi, The Man in the Moon, and The Postal Service, Give Up. So first up, we're going to talk about Nick's choice was... Nine Inch Nails, The Downward Spiral. And Nick, what brought us this album from you?
Yeah, so just kind of in thinking about it, I thought that we all might enjoy just some light pop. just something kind of easy, breezy, beautiful, cover girl.
No, it's definitely that.
No, this was, as a teenager, I think when I started collecting CDs, this is like one of the earliest CDs I bought because my mom had incorrectly... purchased me the remix album called Further Down the Spiral, which is terrible.
Sure.
And so we went to the store to return that one, and I bought this one. And then I listened to it in the car with my mom, which was a very uncomfortable situation.
I can definitely imagine.
But I just thought that there were some things that I think we could find some common ground on, some common interest on.
So... can I tell you my story about Nine Inch Nails before we get into this too much? So, like, this album comes out in 1994.
Correct.
And I would have been about 13, so right on the cusp of, like, starting to be, like, musically rebellious, but still frightened enough of my religious heritage to be terrified of this album. Because later I would listen to Marilyn Manson, who we know is sort of like a disciple, right, of Reznor's. But at the time, this album just kind of scared the shit out of me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, now it's depressing as fuck to listen to, but it's not necessarily scary. It's emotionally heavy, but it's not necessarily like at 13,
yeah, it doesn't,
in the 90s, it was terrifying.
Doesn't seem quite as
no.
is pushing the boundaries. I think everything's kind of desensitized now. But yeah, 94, much bigger deal.
Right, yeah. It was very terrifying at the time. And I just remember, like, everything. And I felt, what was funny is, like, starting the album, I felt that feeling again. I just thought that, like, oh God, like, my father's going to find me listening to this. And, like, then I'm going to have to listen to a lot of Jesus.
And then you got to Heresy, where he says God is dead and no one cares.
I know. It doubled down on that in my head. And so that was kind of a funny thing. But anyway, yeah. So let's get into it. Mm-hmm.
My kind of general feelings on the album. I think that this album is interesting because, number one, I think it's probably the most emotionally raw album that I've ever heard in my entire life. It's kind of like creatively explosive. Mm-hmm. Like, if you heard Pretty Hate Machine is interesting. It's unique. It's Trent Reznor, but it sounds of its time. I don't think it's fully formed. This album feels like he just did whatever the fuck was in his brain. There's like as many random sounds as you can think of, crazy samples, like all of these things. It just feels very emotionally free and creatively free in a way that, even though I think the next album is better than this one, I don't think it has kind of the sonic...
architecture.
That's not even what I... I don't even think it's architecture. The complete, like, sonic chaos.
I was going to say it's more like Sonic, throw it against the wall and see what sticks.
Yeah.
It's like Sonic Jackson Pollock or something.
Yeah.
In many ways.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of themes on this album that, even if you're not morbidly depressed and suicidal,
sure,
are relatable.
Right. Like, and you definitely will be by the end of it.
Yeah. You will. Yeah. You'll have killed yourself.
No, it won't even matter.
Yeah. So that's kind of like my general feelings on the album. What did you guys think listening to it as a middle aged man?
Sure. As the most middle aged man.
Yeah, Peter.
Peter's on the lower end of that. As the most, like I said earlier, like, this came out when I was in my early teens.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, like, this specific album, most of the stuff on here is the stuff that everyone I know or knew associated with Nine Inch Nails, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
for sure. Yeah, it's definitely his most popular.
The most popular album. It's the one that everyone had heard. It's the one that ends up on every movie. Good God, it is emotionally punishing, though. It is an emotionally yes. punishing album to listen to. Mm-hmm. Like, it does not matter what you're doing. And I try... First of all, I couldn't sit and do it in one take. I'm just like, I like my life too much. I can't do this. but, I mean, I don't mean... Like, that's not in no way like a reflection on the work itself. It's just like, it's so much emotional energy.
For sure.
And turned into like this angry sound. And I mean... Is it any wonder that Angry Teenage Boys loved this album?
Right.
And I'm sure Angry Teenage Girls did too, but I don't know any of them. I never knew any of them at that time period.
Right.
But yeah, listening to it, I was doing a couple different things, you know, like just even, you know, driving my car. I'm like, well, I probably shouldn't crash my car to this. Like, you don't want the media story to come out. But no, in all seriousness, like, it's just an emotionally punishing album.
Sure. And that's what I think is interesting, what you say about like teenage boys, like angry teenage boys liking this. I was that.
Mm-hmm.
And that is kind of like the animalistic thing that first appealed to me.
And it's very animalistic.
The whole 100%.
Yeah. Now, as an older person.
Sure.
I, like, find different things in it. To me, it's a little bit more reflective. Because I think that it's technically a concept album.
Yeah.
When he's talking about all of this, like, self-loathing and, like, sexual degradation and, anti-Christian sentiment, he's technically doing it through a mysterious protagonist. Mm-hmm. But I think we all know that it's supposed to be him.
Sure.
But... It's him reflecting on all of these things that he doesn't like about himself. And so I think as an adult, that's kind of how I look at it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at it as a reflection instead of an outlet. Like, to me, I don't feel this way.
No.
But I'm thinking about those emotions and maybe similar things that I felt when I was younger.
Right.
And it kind of like opens like this deeper onion of emotion to me as an adult that I never... Then when I was a kid, it was just like, I'm so angsty.
Right, yeah. I mean, this is like... Yeah, as a teen, you're like, this is the most edgelord album I could possibly own.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And like, I'm just like, this is who I am, Mom, right? Like, it just screams that. But as an adult, I'm just like, holy shit. Like, this is such a really accurate reflection of those moments of despair.
For sure.
As a teenager and as like a young adult. Just like, just those moments where you're just, you can't process things in a way that makes sense.
Right.
Because there are tons of moments on this like where their thing, it doesn't make a ton of sense.
Right.
Like you connect with it, but it doesn't make a lot of sense.
For sure.
You know?
Yeah. And I'd like to talk about some specific passages, but Peter, I want to hear your general thoughts.
Okay, so just given my sort of my lack of exposure to this genre,
right.
I put on that
quick
first
reminder for anyone who hasn't listened to us in a while, and it's been a while.
Mm.
Peter is our resident hip hop guy.
Yeah.
So, like, if there's a hip-hop recommendation, it's almost always going to come from Peter.
Had you even heard of Nine Inch Nails before
Did you know Reznor outside of his work now as a guy who, like, does film scores and
stuff
like that?
Other than the credits of Soul, did you know that he existed?
Perfectly honest, no.
That's a valid point.
So, I did not know at all what I was going to do. I just clicked the button, and I immediately was like, whoa, this is Grady. Okay. Holy crud, this is grating, right?
Yeah.
So much so that I found myself on this entire album not even acknowledging the lyrical content, my first run through.
Mm-hmm.
I was just simply listening to like this soundscape occur before me, dude.
Yeah.
And I wanna and if chaos was the goal, like, you know, achievement unlocked. Okay. Achievement unlocked, because that every single song on that album just like led. Or just from a soundscape perspective, just hit that note. Like, there's even a point where just like the fluidity between each track was just like, did Reptile just start?
Yeah. Well, right. Were there a couple times for you where you're like, wait, are my headphones working?
Yeah. Exactly. No, there was definitely a few times. I don't know what's about my headphones where I'm like, I turned it off. No, that sound's coming from the track.
No.
Okay,
yeah.
My bad.
No.
Yeah. Exactly. And that definitely. So I didn't find myself really sort of like embellishing the lyrical content, but a part of me wonders if that's by design.
Oh, 100%.
You know?
Yeah. The lyrics, in some cases, don't mean anything.
Yeah.
No, and I think there's even a lot of times where, like I said, I've listened to this album probably 100 times, but when you listen to it with headphones, I just feel like I hear new things every time.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like,
Don't hear things in cases.
Yeah, like, there's a sound I never heard, or he's, like, whispering lyrics that I don't even know if are in the liner notes.
Which is,
like,
frankly, creepy as fuck.
Yeah.
Because, especially, like, try doing that when you're, like, working on something something in your office, that is a weird feeling.
It's I think that there are a lot of great lyrics, and I'm going to talk about a couple that I really like. But I think you're right. There, the sounds are there to like convey emotion as you're going through this album. You're going through the quote unquote downward spiral, and you're basically going insane to the point where you get to the end of the album, and we know what happens: bad things. Yeah. And I think that you're absolutely right. When you listen to it the first time, it's kind of just like overwhelming.
Yeah,
everything 100%. You're hearing, you're like, you're like, can this even be music? What the fuck is this? And I think that that's something kind of unique to him. Obviously, there are other industrial bands that do this sort of thing.
Sure.
But I don't know that I've ever heard one that, that hits it quite like this. But talking about lyrics, because I think there are some lyrics in here that are great. And I think as somebody just kind of talking about, there's so many like dark themes and stuff on this album. But a couple, you mentioned Reptile. Reptile's probably, it's one of my favorite tracks on the album. It's a great, it's a great song. But this verse, I think, is fantastic. He says, "Devils speak of the way in which she'll manifest. Angels bleed from the tainted touch of my caress. Need to contaminate to alleviate this loneliness. I now know the depths I reach are limitless." Like, I just, when you're, stuff like this shouldn't be, like, poetic. But, man, I love that. Talking about, I need to contaminate to alleviate this loneliness. Like, that, and this, that's what this album kind of does a lot, right? He like he feels all these negative things about himself, and he's like, I have to make other people feel this way,
right?
Because like,
they won't understand me, and I can't understand myself without being able to look at it.
Yeah, or it's like, it's just not fair that I feel this way if you don't feel this way.
Right.
And so talking about like needing to contaminate other people just to make yourself feel better, I think that's something that everyone can relate 100%. To. There's a moment in everybody's life where you do something shitty to somebody else just to make, because you think it'll make you feel better.
Right.
Maybe it probably doesn't.
Right.
But
and even on top of that, though, just the idea of like just burdening someone with your emotions, just getting it out into the zeitgeist so you can feel better, regardless if it's in a, if it's an intent of maliciousness. But I find myself doing that to like my significant other, right? I'm sort of, I burden her with sort of the more negative aspects. I mean, that's potentially what this album, you know, could be about. And the
our narrator has no one to really do that with. These are, it feels to me like everyone is always theoretical around
And talking about, I mean, there's some people that he introduces, right? Like there's this kind of like female character in Reptile who he's like, who's using him, but maybe he's using her, and it's it's like maybe a transactional sexual relationship, or what. And there's a lot of, I feel like, transactional relationships hinted at on this
which
album,
which is maybe some of the most 90s shit you can possibly
for
do.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I think the great thing about this album, and the reason maybe to be pretentious and use the word, it kind of is transcendent, is you get to the song, the penultimate song, The Downward Spiral, where the protagonist kills himself. But the album doesn't end there.
No.
It ends with a song that everybody knows, but probably know because of Johnny Cash, not because of this album.
Right.
Which is Hurt. And Hurt is kind of the opposite of everything that happens on this album. It's somebody reflecting back on the choices they've made, reflecting back on the life that they've led, and being filled with regret. And you get to this last verse where he says, "If I could start again a million miles away, I would keep myself, I would find a way."
Yeah.
And just talking about, like, you go through all this stuff where you just, you're just being drugged through the mud on this album.
Sure.
Into all of the worst emotions that we all feel, we all go through. And you get to the end, and he's allowed this main character to kill himself. But at the end, he still says, "I wish that I could go back and do everything again. I would never have made this decision." Like, even after everything that's happened to me, it's worth going on.
Sure. And do you, I mean, I don't think this is in any way a hot take, but do you read that as like almost like a suicide note?
After sure.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I don't feel like anyone probably would be surprised to see that reading.
Yeah, 100%. I just think, and that's why, like, I think
And I'm sure it's unfortunately probably shown up in those sorts of things.
I would be surprised if it hadn't, for sure. And not to, I don't, like, the Johnny Cash version of this song is really good. Right. Mm-hmm. And especially watching it with the music video will destroy every amount of happiness that ever felt. But I think there's something special. The reason that I connect to this one more is, I think, because of the way that I like to listen to music that I'm pretentiously made fun of for, I will only listen to whole albums.
Right.
But I think this song in particular pays off 100-fold when you listen to it after having listened to the entire album.
Sure.
Like, you've gone through all of this stuff with him, and then you get to Hurt, and it means something entirely different than if you just heard it on your own.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Right, and I think that's what's really special about it.
No, I agree.
And just in the context of the album, it could be just a regret, like this sense of regret for taking us along that journey up till that point. Mm-hmm. Just in the context of that album, which I think is a fascinating, like, structural component.
For sure. Yeah. So I guess when you guys listen to this album, taking out some of the things we've said, is this an album that you guys enjoyed listening to?
I feel like enjoy is a strong word. And it's not... because, like... I don't mean that negatively, but, like, there are pieces of art that I feel like it is important to experience.
Schindler's List.
But you don't enjoy... Yeah, you don't enjoy that. You don't enjoy it. But it's an important experience. And I think... Yeah, I think this album is an important experience. It should happen to you at least once.
Maybe I'm a sadist, because I legitimately, like, enjoy these songs. And it's kind of funny. Sometimes I'll do just as, like, a stupid game for myself when I'm alone.
Mm-hmm.
I will, like, sing along to these songs, but without any sort of, like, grit. Yeah. And just kind of sing. And they have
You'll just Shatner them.
They have really poppy melodies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, when you sing along to them and you're not, like, gruffing them up like he does... They're basically just pop songs. And proof of why the 90s is better than most decades is that,
here we go,
that Closer was like an actual hit.
Yes. It was going to say.
It was like a big radio hit.
It was a huge. Yeah.
And a couple reasons why this song would never be a hit now. The obvious one is that the chorus says, "I want to fuck you like an animal."
Mm-hmm.
The less obvious one is it has a 3-minute outro that's completely instrumental.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that shit would never be on the radio today. But it was like a legitimate hit. And
it was huge hit.
And it's what made him Nine Inch Nails, like a super famous worldwide band.
Yeah, no.
That would never happen
today. Yeah, it was all over the radio. All over the radio. Yeah. You couldn't escape it, whether you want to or not.
Talking about pop songs, like, that song is a pop song for all for all of its machinery and crazy stuff happening. Like, that fucking drum loop at the beginning is maybe the best sounding drum sample I've ever heard. And it's instantly recognizable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know immediately what it is. You're not like, oh, that's some song by G-Eazy. Like, no, you know what it fucking is, and it rules. Mm-hmm. You were going to say something about it?
Oh, I was just going to say, like, that was like the poppy notes of that song were like, and I've heard this before, and I live in my hip hop bubble, and that hit hard. Like, for real, and I remember hearing that before. Yeah. That's all I was going to say about that.
Yeah.
But as far as sort of like, did I enjoy this? I enjoyed it the way I enjoyed, like, an I Spy book when I went to the library in third grade.
You're going to have to elaborate on that.
because you went there, you were like, oh, I can find a thumb. I got to find the thumbtack this time. I didn't finish the page last time. I got to find the thumbtack this time. And that's what this was on a sonic level. Oh, snap, that beat's new. Or, you know, oh, snap, ooh, that guitar, those strings hit different, you know, that time. And I think that's sort of how I enjoyed it. Less so, like, you're like on the pie chart of my enjoyment of this album. Like, the vocal was like maybe a sliver of like 10 to 5%.
I mean, it's how much that happens for the most part.
Yeah, it's maybe there are five to 10%. But like I enjoyed finding like new sonic things and also trying to make sense of those sonic things.
Sure.
In the context of this album.
Well, I'm glad you say that, because that's primarily why I was interested for you to listen to it.
Yeah.
Because I know we talk about this, and we'll talk about this with your album.
Yeah.
Is that sort of like track creation that's not like, there's real instruments on this album, but there's a lot of synths and MIDIs and stuff, and a lot of sampling. And that's why there's a couple people on this album, Alan Mulder and Flood, who were the producer and the engineer on the album, have a lot to do with that. Like, there's a lot of samples. There's a lot of other people that worked on the album that pulled samples and stuff from movies and other songs and things that, like, make this weird sonic, whatever the hell it is, amalgamation of chaos. But yeah, I'm glad you say that because, like, especially like one track I always think about on here is The Becoming, which is another one of my favorite ones, and it kind of goes to these like crazy different levels and stuff. But at the beginning, like literally a crowd screaming is used as a sample,
right.
Like a, yes, like a rhythmic sample.
Yeah,
yeah.
And you're like, what?
100%.
Yeah. So it's there's a lot of crazy. I think you're absolutely right. I happen to like Trent Reznor as a singer.
Uh-huh.
I think he has more to do on other albums as they get a little bit more streamlined. That might be an offensive way to describe some of their other albums. But I think he has more to do as a singer. But you're absolutely right on here. This one's all about digging through the muck and seeing what you can find.
Sure,
exactly.
Sure.
Exactly.
But yeah, I think I don't have much more to say about it. I'd like to talk about some of your other albums. Do you guys have like any particular tracks that you thought stood out to you or...
I was just gonna say is it called The Warm Place? Is that
A Warm Place?
A Warm Place, which is very different, I feel.
Yeah,
like.
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah. I feel
the calm before the suicide.
Yeah, and that, but that's literally like right, like I don't know what the track title preceding it was, but it brought it down so quickly. It felt sort of aberrant in that album, and I kind of liked almost like where I've been like sonically graded this entire time. I kind of liked like, whoa, like I appreciated that song for what it was because of the context of it inside that album. But yeah,
for sure.
I think picking like, for me, picking one song, again, because I feel like it's an entire experience. This is one of the places where I'm going to agree with you, so don't get used to it. But like, this is one of those places where I feel like listening to the whole album does matter here.
For sure.
In a major way.
Yeah.
I think it's great, you know, historically that, you know, Closer got the radio play it got and gave them everything they gave them. But I think it, as a part of a whole, it works.
For sure.
Way better.
I would 100% agree. All right. Awesome. Well, Luke, you picked Give Up
by the Postal Service.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not the United States Postal
Service. No. Although they did have an argument with the United States Postal Service over that. That's okay. I don't know if you know anything about that. But
I have not.
Yeah. No. Yeah, I did pick the one and only album by the Postal Service. So I chose this album because... first of all, because I love it, and I think that's the most reason we choose most of the stuff on here. But I feel like this album is just, I'm struggling for my words here a little bit, and it's just for me, it's a really, really beautiful album.
Mm-hmm.
It captures a lot of things I'm interested in. In music, like with the electronic stuff, but also some of that indie rock stuff that I really like. Obviously, it's very different from the last album we talked about of mine that I brought in. But found this in college with a friend of mine. At the time, we were deeply into just exploring out, looking for different albums, and we found this album. And honestly, the first time I heard it, it was on a CDR, which is funny considering the album itself was mixed by sending CDRs back and forth through the mail, which is why I got the name the Postal Service. But he actually had like gotten it somewhere and put him in the tracks in the wrong order. So it's actually really enjoyable in almost any order, which I thought was pretty good. But in the order it is, I think it matters a lot. I'm really curious to hear what you guys have to say about it though, because I love it. I think it's very sad, but I think it's great.
Yeah. This is the guy from Death Cab for Cutie.
Yep, okay. Yep.
There's some similarities musically between that. Like you said, this has a little bit more of a Radiohead type vibe. Mm-hmm. Is kind of what I was thinking as I was listening to it. It's more indie than Radiohead, but for sure that's what I was thinking.
Because it's Gibbard and then I'm gonna mispronounce his last name, Jimmy Tamborello, who also records under the name Dentelle.
Gotcha.
So yeah,
there's a couple particular things that I want to dig into, especially lyrics on this album in a little bit. But just generally, I was surprised by this album. I found.
Were you expecting more horns after the last album?
I think that I was surprised by how much I kind of liked the melancholy of it,
mm-hmm.
And.
But not Infinite Sadness. That's a
different No. But I, and we'll talk about it a little bit more as a whole album.
Right.
The way I felt about that going through the album, I think I ended up being a little bit disappointed by some of the thematic content as the album went on.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I found the experience to be a fairly pleasurable one.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the general vibe of it.
Sure.
I think looking for a... I don't know if there's a better way to classify this album than a breakup album. It's essentially like a breakup album.
Yeah.
And I liked it on that level.
Yeah. No, I mean, it absolutely is a breakup album. And I think it's like, it breaks up, like, it's a breakup between people, and it's a breakup between the way you see the world and things like that.
It has maybe my favorite lyrics of any of the albums we're listening to today, so I'm going to...
Well, that makes me very happy.
I'm
going to
talk about it in just a minute, but Peter, I want to hear your general vibe. Yeah.
So I think, like, the melancholy, for whatever reason, I honestly, maybe because I literally listened to it right after yours.
You're like, this is so cheerful.
That it was just, no, honestly, because no. I had that perspective previously. Yeah,
absolutely. It can act as a palate cleanser for
me. Yes,
I mean,
absolutely.
Because I did the other way. Cuddy acted as a palate cleanser for me.
So, and it sort of, I didn't perhaps get the melancholy vibe, but and perhaps also like the tonal notes and just like, the sound they used,
mm-hmm.
the beep and the boop.
Yeah.
Like,
no, it's
honestly,
I mean, there's a ton of electronic stuff.
Yeah,
in there. Yeah,
like it sort of led me into sort of like melancholy in the sense like it's raining outside, not in the sense that I'm like
I mean it in the exact same way.
Yes,
for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Not, yeah, not
it's,
the sense,
it's rainy day and I'm reflecting, kind
mm-hmm,
of a thing.
Exactly,
absolutely.
Rainy day and I'm reflecting. Exactly, and that's sort of like what I felt it as. With that said. We can all agree there was one track, I don't know what it was like a Kirby game. Do you guys know the one I'm talking about?
Hold on, let me look at my track list because I...
You thought it was important enough to know
wait.
Game, but not which
Brand
track
New Colony.
Was.
Yes.
Brand New Colony.
Brand New Colony. I was literally listening to that.
That was an amazing intro to that song.
Yep.
Probably my favorite song on that album. And the intro song was honestly, I just felt like, again, maybe it's because I listened to that, but the mood was juxtaposed to like, I feel like the lyrical content a little
mm-hmm.
bit. Am I the only one who feels that way?
No, I feel completely the opposite.
Sure.
And that song is the one I wanted to reference.
Oh, The District Sleeps Alone Tonight?
Yeah.
The District Sleeps Alone Tonight is the best album or best song on the album for sure. And it has the best chorus of any of the songs we're talking about. The lyrics of this chorus are, "You seem so out of context in this gaudy apartment complex, a stranger with your door key, explaining that I'm
just
visiting, and I am finally seeing why I was the one worth
leaving."
Yep. Holy shit, that rules.
Uh-huh.
I talk about this, this song reminded me a lot of Bob Dylan song.
Mm-hmm.
It is, why can't I remember what it's on Blonde on Blonde. I'll think of it.
Okay.
But it's like one of his best songs. That's going to really drive me insane. But anyway, in the sense that chorus says so much, Visions of Johanna, that's what it's called. that chorus has so much imagery in it that it blows my freaking mind.
Right.
Like,
I feel like the lyrics in general on this album do that. I mean, maybe not to that extent, but they are very good at the images they conjure, I think.
Maybe I want to agree with you,
sure,
but I think I was so blown away by that chorus I kept waiting for like that level of insight the rest of the album, and I don't think I ever got it again. But like just talking about that thing, I was thinking all of these things, like what a great way to illustrate the way so many people feel in relationships. It doesn't have to be a romantic relationship, but think about somebody you know that like has changed their personality, maybe got new friends, and like you come around, but like you don't really recognize them anymore, and they don't treat you like they used to treat you when you're around other people. And I just like there was so much great imagery in that chorus.
And for me, that really ties that particular song itself, that set of images ties into the later song, "This Place Is a Prison," because there's a lot of imagery there about, like, because it literally starts with, like, "This place is a prison. These people aren't your friends."
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then it starts talking about, like, just, like, I mean, there's definitely some sort of references there to, like, cocaine and drinking and things like that. And just sort of, like, living in this party space.
For sure. He's got a great line about it.
Yeah, wait.
No, it's not a party if it happens every night.
Yeah, right here.
That's a great line.
Right. And then, like, yeah. And then it sort of, like, descends into, you know, like, what does it take to get a drink in this place?
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. How long must I wait?
No, I definitely like that song. I remember I really liked the... There was a really cool drum track at the beginning of that song. Mm-hmm. I kind of thought that talking about Nine Inch Nails, it kind of had an industrial vibe to it that I really digged. I'm not saying that like there wasn't stuff throughout the rest of the album that I really liked, but I was looking for that sort of like lonely, melancholy, heartbreak type thing. The rest of the, and that's maybe me just setting myself up,
right.
Like for an album that I didn't even know existed.
Right.
I'm just like, this is what I want the rest of the album to be. And it wasn't quite that.
See, and I found those things in different... I found different notes of melancholy in different spaces. Like, I feel like there are notes of that in Recycled Air.
Mm-hmm.
Just talking about, like, watching the farms disappear, right? And that slow fade.
Oh, that's the most ethereal song in that album.
Oh, I know. I fucking love that. So that is my favorite song on the album, is Recycled Air. It's just the idea of, like, the whole, like, taking off and just, like, sort of becoming unmoored thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The funny thing about this, I just looked at my notes. I did track by track notes of this album.
Mm-hmm.
And I have like sentence long descriptions of every song.
Sure, sure.
On the one, on Recycled Air, just one word, meh.
What was it?
Just meh.
Meh! Really? Oh.
Oh my goodness. Cause I do remember
I just turned around as you guys were talking about it. I just saw meh, and I'm sorry. It was very funny to me.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously I disagree with that take because I really like that song a lot.
Oh, crap.
You know, also, We Will Become Silhouettes, I really love because just, I think some, again, the imagery in there is great. Mm-hmm. Like, just the idea that, like, because it's so, like, upbeat, talking about, like, if you go outside and you breathe in the air, it's going to make your body explode.
Right.
Like, you know.
I will say that kind of talking about how Closer is, like, the hit from my album, your album for sure is the second track, which is Such Great Heights,
which you've heard on Everything Everywhere Forever.
I've never heard it before.
Really?
No.
Oh my god.
But that song is a pop masterpiece.
Yeah, it's in a billion things.
I'm sure it is because it's super catchy. It seems like it should be on the radio, but it's not, I don't think.
Probably not anymore. This album came out in 2003. So.
I find it hard. It doesn't sound like something that would have been on the radio anyway.
It was in a lot of commercials. I know that. And I remember the first time I heard it in commercial and like my, you know, pretentious nerd thing got angry and like, but you know, good for them.
I would be interested. I listened to it twice. I would be interested to listen to it more because I think that the first track just blew me away with like the depth of it, of the imagery. The second track was so catchy. I was like, I was like humming it as I was like walking around and I just never felt that high again. And I really wanted to, and maybe it's, I have so many albums that I love now that I didn't like when I listened to it, even the first few times.
Right.
I'll probably recommend some that we'll talk about in this podcast. And this might be one of those.
Well, I was just thinking about the second track, you know, Such Great Heights, and the part about, like, I tried my best to leave this all on your machine.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, basically complaining about the sound quality. Like, this isn't going to sound right. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, God. Anyway. Yeah.
I think that... I don't know. I like albums like this. There's there's a few albums that kind of... I mean, there's famous breakup-type albums. Sure. And I think that this one hits a lot of those same chords. But there's just certain times when I'm, like, in a mood for something like this.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing particularly bad is happening to me.
No, you just want to have that feeling.
Yeah, I think Peter described it best. It's kind of like a rainy day album. I just love a rainy day. I like feeling kind of melancholy, which is a weird thing. But yeah, sometimes you just want to plug in an album like this that's kind of like, that's kind of chill, but it's poppy in a weird way. I guess that's what impressed me most about this album, is that it was able to be both mainstream and incredibly not mainstream.
Yeah.
And I think that's what, and that Death Cab for Cutie kind of does the same thing.
I was going to say, I don't know how familiar you are with Death Cab for Cutie.
I've only listened to a couple of their records.
Because like, I love those guys a lot. So.
Yeah.
You'll end up listening to one at least one more time somewhere along the way.
So. And I think that that's what impressed me most at the end of the day was the blend of those things where it felt like there was no compromise on this album.
No.
It's not like he was like, I've got to produce this more so like I can get it on the radio. There's none of that.
No. Nope.
But it's catchy, but it's independent. It's kind of a weird thing.
Right. And I think we're starting to see the through line, right, of like these albums, and we'll see it more when we talk about Peter's album. These albums that are doing their own thing, doing lots of like their own stuff and without compromise
for sure
what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really.
And I think one tie with that though is the Kid Cudi album we're listening to mm-hmm. is his first album.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. My album is his second album.
True. Yeah.
Yours, uh-huh. I mean,
the
it's
only
not,
album.
It's not
yeah.
the
yeah.
first album this guy made,
sure.
but under this moniker, it's mm-hmm. it's the only album.
Yeah.
And I think that that is something that's recurring
sure.
for most bands. Is that the first or second album is typically your most like uninhibited. You're like,
right.
I've got nothing to prove. I have no expectations.
Right.
I'm just making the music I want
to
make.
I'm not trying to hold anything in place.
Yeah, exactly.
I think one album that I know I'll recommend later, there are some albums that I think you get lucky with some artists where like their 50th album
sure.
is like an artistic masterpiece.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's pretty rare.
Right.
I feel like a lot of the albums mm-hmm. I bet we're going to be talking about are early career albums.
Yes, mm-hmm. I think you're right.
And there's something special about that, and it's hard to do, and some of it just has to do with the fact that it's hard to make great art over and over and over again.
Yeah.
That's why so few people have done it.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't be that special if anybody could just make 10 albums worth of the best music you've ever heard.
This is true.
So so maybe when eventually the second Postal Service album comes out,
nothing will happen.
Maybe we just shouldn't listen to it.
Yeah. I don't think we'll have to. Depending on how familiar are you with Wilco?
I don't like Wilco that much.
Well, there's this line in one of their songs that says like the best song has never been sung.
Mm.
That's where I am. Like I whatever you imagine their second album to be, it's great, but it's not going to exist, and just enjoy the imagined album.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
That sounds like one of those things that we do when mm-hmm. we're like, oh, this is really pretentious, so you can't make fun mm-hmm. of me for being pretentious.
Yeah.
That's like something you would say like, oh, I can't write, nobody can write a good song, so
mm-hmm.
when you hear an album of crappy songs, it's like, not my fault. <It's> That's a little bit of a cop-out.
Yeah.
But yeah, so for me, talking about favorite tracks and kind of like wrapping up the conversation.
Sure.
I think for me, The District Sleeps Alone Tonight
is
Head and Shoulders was my favorite song on this album. I think the melody's great. I love it, kind of switches tempo. The tempo's the same, but it switches the rhythm of it in the second half of the song. The
sure.
drum beat speeds up, and I think the chorus is even better like that. And I really just love that song. And I listened to it like 50 times. That is not an exaggeration. I was working and I just had it on loop. And I loved it that much. And I really like Such Great Heights Such Great Heights, I think it's just called that.
Yep.
But now that you told me a lot of people know about it, I hate it.
No, well, I felt the same way. Like when I first time I heard it in a commercial, I was like, screw this.
I'm like, this is an indie gem. And now you're like, people know about it. I'm like, this album sucks. That, a little bit of insight into my personality. But those were definitely my favorite two. What about you, Peter?
Well, I see it like, and I know it's sort of a superficial thing, but Brand New Colony for the intro, for for that video game little tone. But also I'd say We'll Become Silhouettes, because there was like a message there where the only way to sort of maintain your identity is by limiting your interactions with others, which I found fascinating as a concept.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
there are some you're right. I think there's some definite themes in there about like the purity of your own space is who you are, and like connecting with other people can mess up you or that space for whatever reason.
Exactly. And sort of on top of that, you know, like Such Great Heights is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, the last track, what's the last track called?
National Anthem? Something Anthem.
Natural Anthem?
Natural Anthem.
Yes. Yeah. Honestly, like as far as like this slow crescendo they did from a musicality standpoint, it was great in my mind. They did like they just came in with some strings, then all of a sudden it explodes, and I was like, "Whoa, that was great." I think that was a great way to end the album. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Luke? Top tracks?
I think we went through my top tracks a bunch of times there.
Well, say them again. We're wrapping
up.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
So
people are just going to skip to the parts where we name our favorite tracks.
Sure. Obviously, I love Such Great Heights. Like I said a couple times, I really like Recycled Air. I feel like that's a good, just sort of like disconnecting song, and I like that. It's a weird thing to effectively capture the nature of like taking a flight and then just sort of like looking out the window. that's not a thing that anyone really like is thinking about song wise. Mm-hmm. But I think within this album, that disconnected moment is really important with all these like grounded things that are happening mm-hmm. in them. You know, I really like Clark Gable because I like the idea of like the idea of reimagining your relationship in the terms of a movie.
For sure.
And thinking about like, because that's what, I mean, what is memory in many ways, but it, like the highlight reel or the like the best parts of the movie we create in our mind.
Right.
For like what our past was, cutting out all the bullshit. And like that whole song is about like, well, I'm just going to reframe all this and like, we'll fake the things that don't work right. And, I really like that song too. So,
rock and roll, mm-hmm. awesome. Well, good recommendation.
Yeah.
I was happy to have listened.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think this time in general, everyone is happy to have listened for the most part. I don't know what your feelings are on Cudi yet. So I'm,
but I feel better about Cudi than I do about Common. Yeah. So let's okay. Peter, you recommended Kid Cudi, Man. In the Moon, right? Or is it On the Moon?
On the Moon.
On the Moon. And it's got like, I feel like it had a,
are you
an
sure?
extra.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Man on the Moon, because there's
the
three
of
them.
Yeah.
The End of Day. Okay. Did it originally have that? Or was it added in like later?
Yeah, was this a New Hope
situation?
I think
that was the end of it because he made like,
he's made two more, because I feel like,
albums. Yes.
Because we listened to it at one point when we were going to do this and then we didn't.
And he just
did it
very recently, yeah.
And then there was a remaster and I was like, oh shit, is this the same album or is this another album?
No. Well, I guess like this album for me hit me in like the perfect time, mm-hmm. early 20s.
Sure.
I was in many ways a lonely stoner.
Mm-hmm.
And this album sort of appealed to that ethos.
Yeah.
To be perfectly honest. I do think it also did a great job of thinking of like that taking that lonely stoner character, the idea of this man on the moon, a person that could see that could see the earth. That was never truly a part of it, and see like what the world is like, but he remains a sort of a man on the moon. I like that that idea. I think it also holistically addresses the human experience on a certain level, like as vain and as sort of like ridiculous as Make Her Say is as a song.
And that song is
absolutely vain and ridiculous. 100% agree. But I think that's a part of the human experience. Just. On some level.
So I'm certainly not going to come as hard at you as I did the last album.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Because I actually like this album.
Mm.
I don't think it's the human experience, but I think it is definitely in the same way that, like, Downward Spiral is one dude's, like, crushing experience for himself, like, whoever our narrator is. Our man on the moon here, like this is his experience. Yeah. I don't think obviously we connect with it because people connect. But I think the bulk of that story is an experience about this one, character, this one character, your lonely stoner or Solo Dolo or whatever he's called throughout it.
Yeah.
Because I feel like there are some very specific things in that album for that character. That I don't necessarily know, like, everyone connects with as part of the human experience. I feel like there is definitely some, like, baggage with your father not being around.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. Like, in this album. And for some people, that's a deep connect. And for other people, like, they don't connect with it as much. And also, I've never listened to... This is me just giving it a little shit.
Yeah.
But I've never listened to an album that has made me, like, less interested in smoking weed in my life. Like,
okay,
oh
yeah,
my
fair.
God. Like, it's... Because it's just, like, so much of the posture.
Uh-huh.
It's so, like... Because I think we all know that one guy who, like, his entire life is, like, telling you how high he is.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this guy is doing in this song. That's what the character... I feel like he's constantly talking about it, and it's like... And I
agree that he is constantly talking.
Yeah, he's constantly talking about it.
But he never talks about it in the sense, like, I've never, every time he mentioned, like, weed in any capacity, I never felt
all
like.
All the capacities, every song?
Yeah, I never felt like he was, like, being, like, he did it in the context of sadness.
It is. It's definitely in the context of sadness. And it's definitely, I mean, it's definitely in more of the context of addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I mentioned, like, that guy. That one person who, like, that's their personality trait.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a positive thing.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a positive trait for that, for the person in this song.
Yeah.
This series of songs.
Yeah.
Because I think definitely in the same way that, like, there's a want of connection in the downward spiral. There's a want of connection here, 100%. And it's not. There's no. There, it's not happening.
Yeah.
There are transactional connections.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. At and like Nightmare. Is like, or not Nightmare, excuse me, what is it? Alive, yeah.
Yeah.
Alive is like a testament to that fact where he sort of, like, he goes out in the world and he sort of is, like just experiencing superficial human connection in this party-like environment,
right?
But although, yet, the next track, the like, just make, like, brings it back down.
Sure.
Brings it back down almost immediately.
And I deeply disagree with our narrator at the end of that album. But anyway.
I'd like to give my general thoughts.
Yeah. Sure.
Sorry. Before
we got off
get,
in the weeds.
Before we get too deep into the weeds. I'm not going to bury the lead on this. The first two-thirds of this album have a lot to find enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
The last third of this album is legitimately awful. It's, I think everything... When I go into a rap album, I'm not going to lie. I'm not a huge fan of rap.
Mm-hmm.
But the rap that I do like... is personal.
Mm-hmm.
It's story driven, and it's not all about doing drugs, banging chicks, being rich, being famous. I don't give a shit about any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for the first two thirds of this album, it's not about those things. And like you guys said, if it is, it's from a personal perspective, and there's some emotion behind it.
Mm-hmm.
The last third of this album basically takes all that and throws it in a burning fire. That song you guys were talking about, that Make Her Say song, made me want to put a gun in my mouth. Was such an... Is that the one that Kanye and Common are both on?
Yeah. No, it's
awful
not a great
song.
I don't like it either.
Horrible song. I got to the last... I was listening... There, I think it's maybe the last five or six songs. Mm-hmm. And the last song is not awful.
No.
But it's... It's mixed up with my feeling of, like, the four or five songs that precede it, which I think are all abysmally bad.
The one that precedes it is Higher, and that song sucks.
Yeah.
I do not like Higher at all.
So,
I'll
yeah,
like that. Yeah,
Make Her Say, Pursuit of Happiness, all Higher. I was just, I could not...
Pursuit of Happiness fell out of place to me in that space.
I think the entire last third of the album feels out of place.
Yeah.
And so I was so angry when I got to that Make Her Say song. I'm like, why is this song on this album? It feels like we're talking about, like, people's third or fourth or fifth album.
Yeah,
when they
like
don't have anything interesting to say anymore.
Sure.
And they're just making songs to get on the radio. That felt just like a song. And they'd be like, oh, we can have a bunch of naked chicks in the video and Lady Gaga's in it and all, and I'm like, it just felt so artistically bankrupt to me that it made me really disappointed, because there's a lot of good stuff on the first two thirds of this album to really like, other than Common narrating it, which I thought was so tacky and dumb. I wish that he was not on it. Most of my exposure with Common is an actor, and I think he's a fine actor. I don't know what his rap is like, but I hope to God it's not like this. And so him narrating ruined. He's only on it. He only narrates maybe three. Or four.
Yeah. And he's the ending narration, which I hate. I fucking hate that.
Every time he popped up as a narrator, I wanted to throw the CD out the window. And granted, I was listening to it via streaming, but I still wanted to get the CD
just
to
check it out
the window. But otherwise, the one thing I really liked about this album. Is I love it when rappers do their own choruses. This is like a thing. Maybe a weird thing that
that's fair.
Annoys me. I hate when rappers like get other people to come do their choruses for them.
Mm-hmm.
That feels like an artistically bankrupt thing as well.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, can you come down to the studio for half an hour? I need you to sing some stuff. But I really liked, and I was glad to find out that in the first song, he's like singing, quote unquote, and it's awful.
Yeah.
But I think it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was glad to see that in the later songs and the choruses, when he sings, he is better at singing than he is in the first song, or they do enough to his voice where it makes it okay.
Yeah.
They like crank the auto-tune up to 500.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some catchy ass choruses in here.
Mm-hmm.
That Intergalactic song is 100%. Excellent.
That is really great.
Yeah.
I really like Day and Night. Some of these songs I'm assuming are hits, and it makes me sick to my stomach that I'm calling them out. I was like trying to figure out which songs were hits. I'm like, don't even bring these ones up. But I'm assuming that I think Day and Night's probably
a
hit.
It's one of the I'd argue it might be the biggest Beyond Pursuit of Happiness.
Okay, then I don't like that song anymore.
Yeah.
Heart of a Lion was really good.
Heart of a Lion was good.
Not really a hit, but
Soundtrack to My Life, Simple As, like I said, I really liked a lot of the beginning of the album. I was just so... Why... Just from your perspective, those songs I'm talking about at the beginning, like talking about Make Her Say and all those, why is that on the album?
I have a theory, but I want to hear yours first.
So I think there comes a point where you sort of make the decision to sort of not live to your sort of personal philosophical maxims. And I think at the end of that, he made that decision in order to adapt.
Do you think that, are you saying that as a as an artist, or are you saying that as the sort of the character of the story?
As the character of the story.
Right, because I would agree with mm-hmm. that to a degree. I think those last few tracks mm-hmm. reflect what he thinks is success.
Yeah, exactly.
I think they are reflections, and mm-hmm. I think they work in that context. Mm-hmm. Outside of that context, they suck and they're awful.
Yeah.
But within the context of like here are these like artistically motivated things. Mm-hmm. Here is like this story, mm-hmm. and again, like it's filled with sadness. And then I think you can look at those in the context of that same sadness.
I agree.
Because like these are these sellout moments. Mm-hmm. They're sellout moments.
Yeah. No one has ever given more undue credit to an artist than you two just did. The answer to this question is simple. He got Kanye West and Common to yeah. be guest rappers on a song that has a sample chorus of a song that everybody likes.
No, I know.
That they think is going to be on the radio to sell the album.
Right.
The thing that pisses
me off. It's the most sellout thing you could possibly do.
But for no character reason, the thing that annoys me about that is there are great radio songs on this album
yeah. mm-hmm.
that are not sellout songs,
no.
like the ones we named.
Yeah.
Like you said, Day and Night mm-hmm. is a hit. That's a great fucking radio song that is not a sellout song.
Mm-hmm.
Make Her Say is a terrible sellout song. And
I think it is by design, though. I really do think it is by design.
Agreed.
Oh, my God.
I think it's by design to be that awful.
Oh, my God.
I really do.
I don't know how you can. I whatever. I you guys are so nice.
But as
I was so much worse in the last album.
Yeah, and as a person who values album structure, you can't deny at least that train of thought, right?
Oh, I can deny it big time because it took me listening to the album and made me want to kill myself. So if you think that added some sort of artistry, like, oh, look at, he just realized that...
No, it added the absence of, but that's the point.
All of fame is selling out and making these commercial songs. Like, fuck that.
No. I don't think it's supposed to be like... I don't think it's supposed to be as reflective as you're giving it, though.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, which is why I hate the narration at the end, because the narration at the end implies that,
mm-hmm.
and I think that is bullshit. Like, because the narration at the end is like, oh, our hero has overcome all these obstacles and look how emotionally he's grown. No, none of those things happened.
Mm-hmm.
What we did is we sat down with a character who is not emotionally growing, who's reflecting on his life, who has given in to the worst fucking impulses of what he could become. Like, let's acknowledge that. Let's sit mm-hmm. with that for a minute and say, like, he has become the absolute thing he talks about not wanting to be earlier in the album,
mm-hmm.
by the end of the album. And then that is the part that
yeah,
I think
I'll agree. Mm-hmm.
fucks it up.
Yeah.
Like, is that yeah. part from Common, which you've hated Common all the way through,
yes,
and then you're vindicated in your hate at the end, because he ruins what that should be. And I guess maybe you're right. Maybe I'm being personally more aspirational for the album than where it actually lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I will acknowledge that. But I think because it is so undercut by Common at the end.
I guess my problem is I wouldn't have any problem like going with your guys' train of thought on
mm-hmm.
this if there was any contextual evidence for that in the song. There mm-hmm. is no self-awareness in that song. There is no... I mean, there's no anything in that song.
It's
Oh, my God. I'm going to leave. let's talk about some of the other songs on the album that are good.
Okay. Okay, let's start. Soundtrack to Your Life. That is the first post is like his intro.
Mm-hmm.
Like, would you say, like, in far as like the track list that's there, for me, that is probably top two. Easy. Top two, top three.
It's definitely the one that made me think that we're all a bunch of sad people.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that, for later, but like, it's the one that I was like, oh, okay, so here's the through line in all our albums.
Uh-huh.
We're all sad.
Yeah. That's fair.
Well, to be fair,
yeah.
Peter was like, I heard this album when I was 20. You were like, I heard this album when I was a sprite. And I was like, I heard this album when I was younger as well.
Yeah.
So it's it's not like we just found these albums. We're like, guys, I just found something that speaks to me as a human in this moment.
No. I know what you mean.
But Story to My Life or Of My Life, whatever the hell it's called.
Mm-hmm.
Great song.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have no problems with it. I have no problems with that song or
mm-hmm.
any of the other ones that follow it up to the terrible last 30 albums.
Yeah.
But I do like some of the themes that you guys were talking about. Normally, I don't like the like character-y sort of stuff of rap, where like rappers give themselves monikers and stuff.
Right.
I thought it worked on this album.
It did. I think it did. And I think I'm. It actually makes me curious to check out the other two, but I feel like I'm probably only going to be let down. Yeah, I've basically done the vigorous head shaking. You're probably
No,
so
not worth it.
Yeah, I was gonna say, and if, because that last third implies a direction that I don't think is positive.
Agreed.
So,
agreed.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that it's like a theme? I found that like most rap, where I'm like, I can kind of get into this. Like, there's a couple rappers where I've been like, I actually really dig this, but it's usually their first album, and then when you get into their second, third album, or whatever. They like don't have interesting stuff to talk about their life anymore because their life is no longer interesting. They're just rich.
Well, yeah, I was gonna say they've disconnected from like, all the stuff that made them interesting. In the first place.
Is that
yeah.
kind of like a? Is Kid Cudi like that? Does he? Because you're saying that the other Man on the Moon albums are not of equal quality. Like, is that something that is like you think is kind of unavoidable as a rapper? That like you're the most interesting when you're young. You're hungry. You've got nothing to lose. And then it's hard to maintain that once you're successful?
Yes, but not because of like because this culture surrounding it, right? Not so much like their individual like solid nature and lack of ambition. Mm-hmm. Because rap, more so than any other genre, is one revolving around social posturing.
Right.
And eventually, when you sort of are confronted with that every day, my assumption would be that you would sort of begin to imbibe that whether you wanted to or not.
Yeah.
Okay. And I will say his third Man on the Moon album, which came out very, very recently, is better than the second. However, the things that make the second one, in my mind, not so good, the things that make some of his other more like rap divergent albums not so good, are less so much the rapping and just more, he's sort of taken, for example, on Kids See Ghosts, which is he was a part of, I forget what track it was, like the fifth track, he like took like Nirvana samples, a few Nirvana samples from there. And I just feel as though like the things that make some of those albums not good from like a sonic perspective are more the fact that he's diverging from what he knows.
Right.
He's trying, in an effort to be more artsy, he just sort of shot himself in the foot.
Well, I mean, then there's that predictive quality of that last third of the album, right?
Yeah.
Like that's where we're going to go with this. And
I guess my problem with it is why I am confused is... Is there any rapper that you can think of off the top of your head that didn't become popular or become prominent off of the back of their technical ability, their storytelling ability, their story? Like, can you think of any off the top of your head where they came out and they were just making sellout music from, like, day one?
Yeah, Post Malone.
I've never listened to Post Malone.
Oh. Well, I would say that's probably a pretty... He wanders into stuff that is more interesting by accident, but not by design.
Yeah, I would say like that's as close you're gonna get to that.
Yeah,
honestly,
because that's
say Jaden Smith.
That's
also true. Because that's what confuses me about the social posturing thing that you're saying.
Yeah.
Is all of these people come to the table as great technicians, great storytellers. Mm-hmm. Who are they trying to impress? Everybody liked them for what they brought to the table when they got on the scene. So what
we liked them, but not necessarily their peers.
But their peers, hypothetically,
took the same path. Mm-hmm. But I think when you come from many of the cultures that there are, many of the sort of the situations they do, I think like the lower your starting SES point, the higher. Like,
when you say SES, you should clarify for the listeners and also the people you're talking to.
Okay, socioeconomic status.
Yeah.
Okay. Like when you.
I just want to caution real quick and let listeners know this is basically a bunch of white dudes here.
Yes, 100%.
So
Peter's Palestinian.
It's fine.
Yeah,
fine.
But he's probably. I just want to be very clear. Like
that's fair. No, that's fair.
Yeah.
Look, he's got street cred. He called it SES.
He called it...
Yes, an acronym from an educator is always street cred.
He took something that was very white, socioeconomic status, and made it much more accessible.
No, he... Yes, he definitely made it more accessible. That's what we do.
But I do think what just once when anyone, regardless, like, when they have more hardship to their life, the moment you sort of begin to nullify that hardship in any capacity, even if it's just a band-aid on the wound. You sort of want to put more band-aids on that wound. You want to put a bigger band-aid, whatever the case may be, even though you're not potentially treating the root cause. I think that's fair.
That's fair. Interesting point of view. I feel bad because I don't want this conversation to monopolize our conversations going forward, because presumably I'm going to have to listen to a lot more rap. And I don't know how excited I am about it, but I'm open-minded about it.
Yeah.
And I don't want to have this conversation a bunch. So this will be the last time I have this conversation. Yeah. This is a good way
I disagree.
I'm going to try my best. But overall, I was very critical, and I feel like most of my input in this segment has been critical. But I actually liked it more than I thought that I would. I found myself again impressed with like the song quality. I really like that he does his own choruses. I liked the rapping on a lot of the songs. Mm-hmm. I found them to be catchy. I thought some of the lyrics were very interesting. I wish that the last third didn't exist. I think if it ended like five songs earlier, it'd be a really good album.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and I think we kind of talked about some of my favorite songs. Story.
Yes, Soundtrack to My Life. Day and Night was one.
Day and Night. I really liked the Lion one.
Heart of the Lion. I really liked that one too.
Yeah, so there were some good tracks that I found myself kind of bopping along to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But Luke, what were some of your favorite jams?
I really liked Heart of the Lion. I found myself like... Oh God, what's the name of that song? Let me pull it up.
Make or Say?
No.
Also, can we just say...
Simple As. I liked Simple As.
Uh-huh.
That was a good song. That was a catchy-ass chorus.
Yeah. It was very... Yeah, it was very... And the opening. I liked the opening of it. Like, I like the ABC 1-2-3 kind of a thing there. Mm-hmm.
Funnily enough, talking about notes that I made, I disagreed apparently with that. I said, I want to kill myself at this ABC 1-2-3 thing. But then after that, I had very nice things to say about this
song. And there was one... What's the one? Oh God! Is Alive the one that has like vague werewolf nonsense going on? That's the one I thought I was thinking of. Like, for him to grab ABC 1-2-3 stuff, and then to do something that like, in many ways, kind of feels like look, I'm kind of doing a thrillery thing.
Okay, gotcha.
Like I felt was kind of like.
I get that.
I mean, I get, like, acknowledging that space, because you're not going to be able... You don't exist outside of that.
Yeah.
Of some of that work. But I just felt like... it just made me want to go listen to Thriller. I was like, there's a better version of this song in Thriller. And it has better narration than Common, because it has Vincent Price.
That song, though, definitely requires context.
Yeah. No, that's, without context.
That's,
right, mm-hmm. and it's like right before it starts to fall, like the album starts to fall apart. And I think it has parts of that where you're like, you're going like, is this where you want to go? Okay.
Sure.
Peter, we're getting kind of long in the tooth, so why don't you give us some of your favorite tracks and we'll wrap up your segment.
Okay, so obviously Soundtrack to My Life, but Solo Dolo hits hard. For me, I enjoyed that. It probably, as far as Lonely Stoners go, that probably hit the hardest. I would say Day and Night, obviously. Although Pursuit of Happiness is sort of like sandwiched between maybe not the best, I enjoy the song Unto Itself, probably arguably the most. I Hardline also fantastic. But yeah, I think I'd say like for my top three, I'd say Soundtrack to My Life, Solo Dolo, and Pursuit of Happiness.
Mm-hmm. All right, mm-hmm. Cool, awesome. Well, I have gained a lot of insight about myself from this week's conversation.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and go around. I'll start. We're going to make our recommendations for next episode.
Oh, okay. Next episode recommendations.
I will start. I'm going to go in a completely different direction.
Bob Dylan album?
Nope. I want you guys to get your adoption papers ready.
Sure.
Because we are going to be going to the Humane Society at Lilith Fair.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to listen to Surfacing by Sarah McLachlan.
Okay.
Surfacing by Sarah McLachlan.
Okay, got it.
This could not be a different album from the one I made you guys listen to next week. So let's go in a completely different
way. Sounds great.
Peter, what are you going to have us listen to next time?
Okay. We're going Igor by Tyler, the Creator.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Igor, like the hump?
Yeah,
I the hunchbacked man?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay.
So you got, why don't you just send this out to us in the text so yeah. we'll have it all, because I'm not going to find it right yet. We're going to, if you guys like the electro pop stylings mm-hmm. I gave you before, we're going to double down on that with the Apples and Stereo and their last album, Travelers in Space and Time.
I thought the Apples and Stereo was the name of the album, which I'm like, that's a good name for an album.
No, that's the name of the band, the Apples and Stereo, and the album is Travelers in Space and Time, their 2010 album, and it's great, I think.
Okay, so. Cool. Well, we will listen to those albums, we'll reconvene, we'll have another conversation. Sure. Our hope is that the next one won't take us an hour or a year and a half to listen to.
Right, yeah.
But no promises.
No promises.
Awesome. Well, thanks for listening, guys.
I appreciate it.
So this has been Earful, a podcast where three friends talk about their different musical tastes and argue with each other about why they're wrong sometimes, but also find commonality as well, but apparently not with common narrating.
Commonality.
Thanks for listening. You can find us wherever podcasts can be found.